Captain's log, stardate 45047.2. With Q's Adventures of Robin Hood fantasy behind us, we move on to Season 5's Darmok, an episode that showcases, at least in this captain's opinion, the best qualities of Star Trek, which include diplomacy, understanding, and incomprehensible technobabble.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Savage kidnapping.
You're holding our captain. I want him released.
And Picard is forced to play a dangerous game of survival.
No!
Now there is only one way to bring him back alive.
It's gonna take me at least a full day to do it.
Captain Picard could be dead by then.
And it could lead to a full-scale war.
Stand by to fire, Mr. Worf.
We cannot survive another hit.
Deadly encounter on another exciting episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Apocalypse Video TrekCast. I'm your host, Dave. I'm joined again by Jackie.
And put his arms wide.
And Ensign Mike.
Michael, his beer open.
And we are talking about Season 5, Episode 2's Darmok. This was the 102nd episode of Next Gen. And to me, I think a lot of people have, there's kind of the belief, or at least to a lot of people I've talked to, and just the general consensus on the internet, that the peak of Next Generation was probably Season 4 through 6. Like 4, 5, and 6 kind of had like the best episodes.
Yeah.
And this one in particular, Darmok, is often referred to as one of the best episodes of the series. And I think that's absolutely fair.
This was your pick, wasn't it?
This was my pick for a Season 5 episode, and I think I really like this episode just because even it's really interesting, too. I like this episode even as a kid, like because it's not like an action-packed episode. There's a few moments where, like, phasers are shot, but for the most part, it's mostly just trying to establish communication with...
It's a conundrum.
Yeah. It's just trying to establish communication with someone and trying to get past that barrier of communication and just trying to bring two people together. And even as a kid, that was something I was like, this is a really good episode. This is a really, like, well-written science fiction episode. And I still think that to this day. It's one of those episodes I go back to, like, comfort food. It's like comfort watching. This is an episode of Star Trek I could watch that always just makes me feel good.
Yeah, it's like... just to kind of like get into it a bit, it's basically like the Federation or the Enterprise is going to have a meeting with the species, and they kind of set it up to like, they don't seem like hostile or anything, but like no one can figure out what they're saying. And like there was a meeting previously that like didn't go anywhere because no one could understand them. And Picard is, it's kind of like the challenge of like, well, how, let's try and communicate with them. Like we got the universal translator. And, like, it's interesting because we've seen the Enterprise encounter lots of things at this point, and they can talk to them, like, all pretty easily. Like, it seems like they've kind of figured that stuff out. So you're kind of like, well, how hard can this be? And they encounter them, and they don't make any sense. And yeah. They're, like, just getting, like, frustrated at each other. And eventually one of the...
Daymok!
The children of Tama, the Tamarians, who like, yeah, with the universal translator, it's like they're speaking the same language, but it's as if like the order and the diction and all the meaning is just incomprehensible between, you know, the Federation and the Tamarians. So we can identify the words that they're using. I think Data says, like, it would appear that he is referring to proper nouns and places, but we have no idea, like, what they're trying to indicate. And so the head of the captain of the Tamarian vessel, Captain Dathan, and Captain Picard are beamed down to the surface of the planet. And why are they there? We don't
forcefully
know.
The Tamarians, at one point, the lead guy, what's his name?
Captain Dathan?
Captain Dathan, like, so they're having this chat that's going nowhere on the Enterprise, you know, between the two ships. And eventually he's just like, he's talking to his guy, his number one, essentially. He's just like, this ain't fuck. Basically, you could get what they're saying. He's like, this ain't working. This is useless. And then he's like, Tabok, don't make me say Tabok again to you. But eventually he's just like, well, how about we do this thing with the thing and the thing?
And, let's do the thing. And then
let's do the thing. Essentially is what they're saying. You know, I forget all the things. He's like, dude, how about this? Darmok and Jalad.
At Tanagra.
And then suddenly he's like, everyone on the ship is like, oh, okay. Fuck, dude. Are you, what? You know?
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
So that's when he pulls out this little knife. He holds it towards the screen.
He's got two knives.
Two knives. Yeah, over his chest. Like, sing, pulls him out. And the crew of the Enterprise is like, what the fuck is going on? And then suddenly Captain Picard is beamed against his will to this planet. Science mumbo jumbo, they put a little scattering field over the planet so they can't beam down. They can sense
science mumbo jumbo.
Science mumbo jumbo, blah, 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 blah. So basically the episode is the Enterprise trying to get Picard back while Picard is on the planet with this guy trying to communicate. But they are being pursued by a predator-like alien that kind of phases in and out. And it's this mutual, basically the gist of the episode is, by having this mutual enemy, they are able to eventually get over that speed bump of communication.
Come together and, yeah, communicate.
We're together, communicate, and Picard realizes, oh, you talk through metaphor by citing example. You
know? I love your Picard impression, Dave.
Thank you. It's terrible. But thank you.
I was I wrote down that like it this episode is like just the predecessor for the entire discussion of language in the movie Arrival, of like, how does one communicate with a creature whose entire like communication method is fundamentally at odds with your own, and also how do you explain the concept of like a language structure when you have no kind of common ground to do so. And obviously
no,
it's much simpler here with Darmok than with the like squid alien circle
communicating through non-linear time,
you know, some whatever. You know, yeah. that's a little more 21st century sci-fi than the 20th century sci-fi that we're dealing with. But I really love the performance of Captain Dathan, played by the actor Paul Winfield, who also played Captain Terrell in Wrath of Khan, who is killed pretty dramatically. What was it with the earwig that kills him, or is it?
He has the earwig in him. Eventually, he tries to rebel and he kills himself when he like disintegrates himself with the phaser. He's like,
oh yeah. But his performance as Dathan is so good, and you understand the entire time like his frustration. Well, you know, he does the thing where he's that people, you know, will do when they're trying to communicate with someone who doesn't speak their language, of like, I'll say this slowly and I'll you know, try to do you under, you know, Dharma, what is one of
dude,
the
dude Darmok, right?
He's Darmok
Temba, his arms wide.
Temba, and his then when arms wide.
When Picard is on his end being like, what does this mean? Does this, are you indicating like sharing? Are you indicating, I don't know what this is. And then Dathan just like sighs heavily, and it's so good because you understand everyone's frustration, but you still don't quite understand like what the Temerians are trying to get across.
I'm not sensing anything hostile from them, Captain.
Rai Angiri Aluka. Rai of Luwani. Luwani under two moons. Jiri of Umbaya. Umbaya of Crossroads. Atlunga. Lunga, her sky gray. Rai and Jiri at Lunga.
Counselor.
I sense nothing but good intentions from them, Captain.
Mr. Dayton, the Temerian seems to be stating the proper names of individuals and locations.
Yes, but what does it all mean?
I am at a loss, sir.
Yeah, and you did right.
That's actually, like, this is trying, one of them, sir. Like, I love Troy's character, but the show, throughout its whole run, I think never really quite does a good job of, like, making her useful. But this is an episode where she's totally useful. Yeah. Like, this is where you want an empath to be like, hey, no one can understand. Yeah, like, we have no idea what they want, but I can tell you at least they're trying, they're on, like, your side here.
And she and Data are the ones to go through, like, you know, matching up the references to, of, you know, this culture's reference to Temba or to, you know, Jalad, and
they do kind
of
like
that.
It's interesting because it's kind of like there's no B story to this, but there is like a there's the time on the planet with Picard, and then the time up in the ship where they're still just trying to figure this out too. And the ship, it's neat because you see them both trying to solve the same problem with different approaches. Mm-hmm. And on the ship, they are able to kind of, I think, like, around the time Picard does, or maybe even before Picard, like, they're able to piece together, oh, they're talking in metaphor, but they hit a wall because they're like, well, we don't know any of these, like, stories. They give the example of, like, it's like they're saying, when Juliet's on her balcony, but you've never read Romeo and Juliet.
You have no idea who Juliet is or what a balcony is.
Right. And like that whole thing is really interesting too. And I don't know if the episode ever really like pieces that together. Cause like, how does Picard become so familiar with the mythology that he's able to communicate?
I think it's less that he becomes familiar with the mythology and that he just eventually understands, like, I don't know. I guess understands
more.
He
gets the context of Darmok and Jalad and what
they were
doing.
Yeah, the context.
I get it. Darmok and Jalad at Tanabra.
Chaka when the walls fell.
He mentioned like on the beach, like, oh, he was alone. Like the whole campfire scene when he pieces it together.
Oh,
he
yeah. Realized, he's like,
he
beach,
gets the context,
alone.
He works through.
Yeah.
Alone at sea.
And he also, I think importantly, is forced to, when the, you know, predator type predator injures and eventually kills Dathan, that Picard is then forced into this like caretaking role, and it's not just two captains kind of at odds trying to communicate, but it's like I'm the only person who can like try and help you like survive this, and it becomes a kind of different need to communicate there, and you know, maybe more immediate in some ways.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Yeah. Chaka when the walls fell.
Chaka when the walls fell.
Well, so that's like the meat of the episode. And again, I think this is like peak Trek. This is like perfect. The perfect, like we mentioned on the previous Trek cast, that Cupid was kind of like a perfect distillation of the silly side of Trek. And yep, this feels like the perfect distillation of the serious, but not, it's serious, but not to a point where it's
not dour.
It's not dour. Or, yeah.
And it's still fun. Good. Like, you still got a predator thing in there. This feels like it could have been to like a original series episode in a way, where you have like Kirk beaming down with the captain of another ship to like try and solve a problem.
Yeah.
Except in that episode, he's with the Gorn.
Fights the Gorn.
He fights, and eventually he's like, I will not fight you.
At no point does Picard have to slow-mo fight, a plastic mask or build an explosive cannon. But it is, that same kind of core of it of, like, I have no frame of reference for, like, what you're doing or why, but we're still going to come together and, try to get along.
That's the meat of the episode, and I think it's really good, like I said. But there's the other part of the episode we should address. It's not the other part. It's a different aspect of this, in that how dumb is the language of the Temerians? Like, I think this is one of those sci-fi ideas where it's a great idea in concept and it works great, but when you
sit down and think about it
and think about how that language would work, how they, you know what I mean? Like, how would a species that,
how do you get to
like
the
that,
point where you're speaking in metaphor without understanding?
Yeah.
Like, normal text.
How do you just say, like, hey, could you grab me a burger? It's like, Darmok at Burger King or something like that. It's just like, what?
Darmok before the burger fell.
It's like, I would believe that, like, a lot of the communication in such a way comes down to, like, like emphasis or like facial expressions and stuff like that of things that would be...
But if they don't understand, like, quote unquote normal talking, how do they communicate the stories in the first place?
Yes.
I don't know.
Well, how do you learn about Darmok? Like, or I guess like you're only talking in...
Well, we don't know if they have books there.
Well, there's a perfect that whole idea is perfectly shown in the episode when Picard's like, oh, you want me to tell you a story? Oh, Gilgamesh. It's funny because he can't explain it the same way. The only thing he could say is, like, here are some names, and it's basically the Darmok and Jalad story. Because he's saying things like, he tormented his people. You know, he did this, he did that. And I gotta imagine the Temerians like, what?
I know that for a lot of that, he's just kind of smiling like,
yeah,
okay.
He's like,
Darmok?
It isn't until he says... Gilgamesh and I forget the other character's name.
Gilgamesh and the other
Gilgamesh
guy.
And the other person
Gilgamesh
from
and the, other
the
guy
story of Gilgamesh
at Tanagra. Yeah, it's just like,
is this a story? A very ancient one from Earth. I'll try and remember it. Gilgamesh, a king. Gilgamesh, a king, at Uruk. He tormented his subjects. He made them angry. They cried out aloud, send us a companion for our king. Spare us from his madness. Enkidu, a wild man, from the forest, entered the city. They fought in the temple. They fought in the streets. Gilgamesh defeated Enkidu. They became great friends. Gilgamesh and Enkidu at Uruk. The new friends went out into the desert together, where the great bull of heaven was killing men by the hundreds. Enkidu caught the bull by the tail. Gilgamesh struck him with his sword.
Gilgamesh.
They were victorious. But Enkidu fell to the ground, struck down by the gods. And Gilgamesh wept bitter tears, saying, he who was my companion through adventure and hardship is gone forever.
I I don't know. I think there are less simplified versions that kind of exist in the English language in the time that we're living, but that like, oh my God, I saw.
It's like he only talks in memes.
It's that's the thing. Yeah, I think yes! the closest thing yes! is memes where
Kermit sipping tea.
There was literally I wish I could find it of
Picard, his brow furrowed.
Well, like think of, you know, you see like a meme or even like a series of memes that mean something that like if you tried to explain it to like your parents, they'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? But because you know, live and breathe the internet, you know what it means precisely.
Man looking away from girlfriend at more attractive woman.
And yeah, if you're saying it like that, it, like this wouldn't be how you communicate it. But a really good example was from a while back, and this was literally like someone had this text on like screen caps from the episode Darmok, where it's Dathan saying cinnamon shrimp toast got milkshake ducked, and it's a picture of Picard where he's like, what? And in context, like they referenced like a very specific thing that was happening like on Twitter, but if you don't have the context for any of that, you don't know what it means. And it's a series of absurd words in no particular order, but if you know the syntax and the, you know, the context, then you know what it means. And in that case, it meant that this guy who went viral for a specific thing immediately afterwards, because he worked in like entertainment or something, people were like, oh yeah, that guy like sexually harassed me like all the time at the job when I worked with him, or like just a bunch of people immediately come out and be like, that guy sucks, sorry if you were laughing at his like funny Twitter thread or something. And again, like if you were trying to show that to like your boomer parents, it'd be like, I don't know what any of this means and I don't care.
You'd be like, no. Well, there's the extremely simplified meme where you're trying to explain that to your parents and then you just, they're shaking their heads and then you just like say, Harvey Weinstein. Oh, okay.
Harvey Weinstein at Cannes.
Oh, okay. Or like, hey, how come everyone's mad at that person? You're like, Harvey Weinstein.
Oh.
Oh, okay. Or even if you were trying to explain to, you know, someone 20 years ago, like, oh, what's this thing and why are people upset about that? And you just say to them, like, me too. They'd be like, oh, okay. If you said to someone 20 years ago, like, they got me too'd, they don't know what you mean. But, you know, if you say that in even in the wasteland, it's like it's, you know what it means.
Yeah. I just imagine Captain Dathan trying to put in a lunch order. You know what I mean? Like, no mayonnaise.
He just wants the teriyaki chicken. And
extra
like...
this, no that. Like, it wouldn't be possible. I can't imagine trying to...
Darmok, not at salad bar.
It's just like, how does a race like that, that communicates in that way, come up with, you know, space travel? How do they communicate, like what's Starfleet, what's the Starfleet equivalent for the Temerians look like when they're trying to explain complex, you know, equations and math and this?
How
and
do
that?
They do their science mumbo jumbo?
Well, that is what the beautiful, diverse world of Star Trek fan culture is for figuring all that out and creating a full Klingon language and etc. Because the, you know, at the time they wrote it, they were not thinking of all that.
Do you guys, I didn't dig too deep into the trivia on this episode, but is that, I know that Klingon is like an actual language now, like the fans,
yeah, people have worked out like, yeah, a full syntax, all of, you know, dictionary.
Is this a language?
Yeah,
I don't know.
It can't be.
Well,
there's no way.
Underestimate the fans.
Well, it makes me wonder, like, do you think we could, the human race in the real world could ever get to this point? Because I've thought about that at times. Like, because oftentimes when I communicate with you guys, we're in the store and I will pull out my communicator and text you guys a GIF or a meme in lieu of actually speaking to you. So do you think it's fair that, like... that we could have gotten to that point, like before the fall happened. Do you think it's possible that the human race could have gotten to the point of speaking in metaphor?
Only in meme?
Only in like meme only or in GIF. Meme? Yeah, like...
I think it's possible. I think it is possible.
I think so, because like even just in like... you know, something like a meme is not just language, but it's like humor and shared cultural touch points, which like if you were trying to communicate that to someone, you know, not from the remains of America, like they wouldn't necessarily understand it if they didn't have the same frame of like, you know, all of that. And I think... the way that language can evolve, especially in just like hyper specific subcultures, like, you know, we could become Temerians. We could become the children of Tama.
And then people who speak like normally are looked down upon.
Like, why are you using so many fucking words? What are you, a narc?
Pretentious, using sentences.
I'm looking right now though at the Chattopedia Star Trek, this is the page for this episode, and the memorable quote section is almost entirely the Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra were
it's just
Shaka
all of
when the
things.
Walls fell, Temba his arms wide, Darmok and Jalad on the ocean, Darmok and Jalad they left together, Temba his arms wide. Yeah,
well,
yeah, these are memorable quotes.
It's funny, like, even though like the whole idea of their language is dumb, like the moment at the end when Picard beams back up on the bridge, they get him back and he walks up and they're about to be destroyed by the Temerians. And he just walks up on the bridge. He has a knife out and then he just holds it up. Picard and Dathan at Eladriel. And they're like, oh
they
everyone,
really
everyone
knew
in the Temerian ship's like, fuck yeah, man. It's just it means so much. Even though you're speaking to a community that speaks primarily in memes and GIFs. It's just
I get it.
That's a good moment too. Like that sold well, that thing. It feels like it is like damn.
Our shields have failed. Commander, we cannot survive another hit.
Hail the Temerian vessel.
Aye, Captain.
Cinder! His face black, his eyes red!
Temarc! The river Temarc! In winter!
Darmok!
And Jalad! At Tanagra! Darmok! And Jalad! On the ocean!
Sokath! His eyes open!
The beast of Tanagra, Uzani, his army, Shaka, when the walls fell.
Picard and Dathan at Eladriel. Mirab with sails unfurled.
Temba, his arms open.
Temba, at rest.
Thank you.
Power has been restored, sir.
New friends, Captain?
Can't say, number one. But at least they're not new enemies.
Well, I saw in the Chattopedia as well that this is... something linguistic teachers will show like students to just kind of like I could see this being like first day of class kind of
let's
like
watch something fun let's
get,
talk about
ease
language.
Into the class, get the idea of kind of how like language can be different in cultures and the ways I mean this is extreme and there's probably not example but there is probably, you know, hey, different cultures are gonna have like entirely different ways of approaching language. And this is like a cool way of showing. I love this. I love this episode. And it is, Dave, you're totally right. This is what Star Trek is. This is why Star Trek is good, is episodes like this.
It's not people's heads getting chopped off or people's eyes getting drilled into.
The sheer fucking hubris.
It's just a slow-moving, frustrated Picard trying to work shit out.
But still being that diplomat. It's like, I will not fight you, you know?
Yeah. He's like, I don't know what this is, but I'm not trying to fight you. I'm just trying to... Can I go back to my ship? Can we work this out?
I would love to discuss this further over a cup of Earl Grey.
Yes.
Please.
Please.
Would you like to see my artifacts?
Do you like archaeology?
He just puts the little DTF statue outside his quarters. I forget what that was called in that episode of Cupid. But anyway.
What's the captain's name?
Dathan.
Dathan? Yeah. Picard and Dathan in bed.
Ad riser.
Picard and Dathan. Ad riser.
That means I'm horny. Do you guys have a word for that?
Captain, horny? Is everything okay in there? And then you just see like Picard goes Chow Yun Fat, leaning back, chewing gum. His thumb raised. Oh, I mean, okay, Captain. We
that's
got you,
one
we got
way
you.
To communicate. Oh, yeah. That doesn't require language.
The other guy's like Homer moving into grass slowly.
Homer becoming part of Bush.
Well, I was afraid that this episode was going to be like, you know, the Chris Farley show where it's just like, isn't this episode great? So I don't have a whole ton of notes on it because it's just one of those things where I just love this episode. Did you guys have any, it seems like we're all pretty positive on it, but did you guys have any like real negative thoughts about the episode?
I mean, the like Predator fight stuff is pretty forgettable and kind of dumb. And like, I don't understand what curse was laid upon Star Trek that it just like cannot have good action ever. Like,
hey, it's give and take. You want the good sci-fi? We're sacrificing some action. You want the good action? Well, it's not.
It has to
be
lumbering
sci-fi.
Yeah, that's the perfect way to describe the action. Lumbering. Like whenever there's like a phaser shootout, it's always just them like kind of stumbling around, like ugh, like doing these like weird dodges, like ugh. Pew, you know,
like this should be. It's like, I mean, I don't know if this is the case or not, but it always feels to me like they didn't have like until the JJ era. It felt like, is someone who directing this action scene like never directed an action scene before?
There's a lot of like double fisted like pounding on people's backs, like
the Shatner classic.
Yeah, good thud.
It's I think that is again, when we're talking about old Star Trek versus new Star Trek, like what do you want from it? Because you're not going to get everything.
Why can't you have both?
Women learned this a long time ago. You can't have it all.
You know what they need? The perfect Star Trek movie is going to be directed by Alex Garland, maybe, or who did Arrival?
Denis Villeneuve.
Villeneuve. But the action scenes are directed by the Wachowskis.
Okay. Well, I mean, arguably, you know, a Matrix is sci-fi, and, you know, just saying. Good sci-fi there. Good action.
I'm really trying to rack my brain for a moment in any of the shows when the action was legit good.
I mean, well, some of the Borg stuff is like,
well, like the best of both compelling. Worlds. I thought about that, but again, it still boils down to like dodge, phaser, you know. But I think in those scenes, you know what it is. I think when the action is good in Trek, it's not so much that the action itself is like,
believable,
oh my god. It's more because like it's the tension of like, are they going to get out of it? It's not so much the action is cool. It's just like
it's a tool rather than the spectacle itself.
Which is the same thing with this episode in Darmok. It's just like, yeah, the action itself isn't good, but it's the threat of like, oh my god, are they going to both die on this planet not having communicated to each other? You know, that kind of thing.
I mean, and to be fair too, this show in general is, I feel like we're holding it to a higher bar than, like, what other show from the late 80s had action scenes that hold up today. Like, yeah. What other TV show had that?
That's true.
Like, this show, like, feels so much better than its medium that, in a way, we're kind of holding it to unfair standards. Like, it's probably had good action for, you know.
Yeah,
did Miami Vice have, like, better shootouts than this? I don't know.
No, that was still a whole bunch of, like, you know.
Quantum Leap.
Play acting.
Hey,
with,
man.
Like, sound
Quantum
effects
Leap.
That are like, oof.
Quantum Leap had, you know, Scott Bakula doing a roundhouse kick to somebody's face in every episode. So I would say that that is good action.
Should we watch an episode of Quantum Leap?
I love that show. I'd be down for that. But anyway.
That I would say, if we're talking about, as you said, negative notes about the episode, when I was looking up the actor who played Captain Dathan, Paul Winfield, he has talked about, he's, you know, a black actor, and he's talked about that, like, in these two big Star Trek roles of his, he dies both times for white characters to live. And obviously, as Dathan, he's wearing a whole bunch of alien prosthetics, and he isn't supposed to, you know, appear as a real life human who is black, but that, you know, it's something that Star Trek is, again, of its time in many ways, in the ways that it is progressive, especially going back to the 60s, that, you know, merit discussion in the concrete ways that they still exist and existed then, and that the entire kind of, you know, one of the cornerstones of sci-fi in general, and Star Trek in particular, is that they're using science fiction to talk about real life things that are maybe less acceptable to talk about with nuance in a way that can flatten some things, and that, you know, if your entire stand-in for real life racial or ethnic groups are always aliens or non-human things, then that, you know, kind of can give some, I guess I'm not quite sure what I'm trying to say, but that it still has you removed from the real life people that it is ostensibly talking sympathetically about, and that that can reflect in real life ways, such as, like, black characters or black actors are still being used, you know, their deaths to further white stories. And it's not to say that, you know, this episode is the, like, a racist thing or something that should be unacceptable, but that, like, you know, as this genre continues to live and breathe, like, it's worth exploring how it has become, or always has been, majority led by white men, and that people who are not white men have always been interested in science fiction and speculative fiction, and that, you know, those voices are still marginalized. Anyway, it's a very good episode. He has a very good performance as this alien character, but it's something that the actor has, you know, talked about, wishes were a little different.
I'm trying to think of, like, times when racism was brought up in Star Trek, and, like, it was brought up with, I think it was touched upon in Measure of a Man, like, and they have Guinan say it. And I'm trying to think, there was another episode with, like, Data, where, like, this he's commanding a starship, and this guy is just, like, doesn't want to take orders from an android, you know,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
It's always, like, and again, it's like, this is a big thing in sci-fi that, we're not talking, you know, one-to-one.
It's not direct. It's like, use this as an example to talk about this other thing going
on. And that can be very helpful in a lot of ways. But again, sometimes it can kind of flatten some real life, you know, nuance of these things, which is why it's very important to, you know, look at voices in this kind of fiction who are not white men. They exist. Yeah.
But like you said, it is of its time. So it's like, and they were trying to be progressive, and
and
I don't think this episode, and like you said, this, I don't know if this episode it doesn't necessarily deal with racism specifically. I don't think it does really at all. It's just that barrier of communication. But like you said, I think, yeah, like, the Paul Winfield saying, like, it would have been kind of nice if, you know, it wasn't used, like, my death wasn't used to further, like, the White story. But like you said, it's like, baby steps, they were trying.
It's something that's, an ongoing look at the genre and the medium and the ways that it succeeds and the ways that it fails.
I think that's in the intro. And, that, you know, it's like space, Final Frontier, baby steps. Hey, we're trying.
Hey, we're trying. Space. And that said, still a fantastic episode and great performances all around. And I said this off mic, but I'll say it again because I'll always fucking say it. Picard wearing his business casual suede jacket with the leather detailing is such a good look. Oh, always good. I'm so glad he put it on for it's like time to talk with this alien civilization we've had no luck communicating with. I got to make a good first impression.
I'll wear my business casual jacket.
My business casual jacket. My two-piece.
One thing we haven't mentioned, too, this is another great example of going to a mysterious, bizarre, far alien planet that's definitely just L.A., like outside of L.A.
Yeah. This is a valley in California.
Well, don't they go to the same like rock area?
All the time. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always the same rock area. I forget what it's called, but it's where like Kirk fought the Gorn and all that stuff. Like, yeah. You see it in everything.
Bronson Canyon.
Oh, is it? Yeah. California's got some good canyons.
And I can't remember. I don't think we necessarily see that formation in this episode, but it definitely feels like they're like on the other side of that mountain or something.
They're like, let's go where there's like a couple more trees.
Yeah. Like I just imagine like just off screen, there's like some hikers and like a smoothie stand.
Yeah. It's basically just like, we want to have a desert situation. Let's just go like, 45 minutes outside of town or something like that.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
it's great.
It's always good when they have to go to California. I mean, outer space aliens.
A far off planet of Burbank.
Burbank. Well,
Burbank.
Did you guys? I have a little bit. I have like one trivia note here. Unless you guys had any other.
No, go for it.
Talk about. So something that stood out to me because we've all been sort of like watching Next Gen kind of on our own, in the store and stuff. And I had watched an episode called The Game,
Young Wesley.
Well, Young Wesley, yeah, he comes back to the ship. He's been off, and there's like this whole, and maybe we'll get to this episode in the future, but basically he gets caught up in this thing where like
all the adults get caught up.
Yeah, the entire ship is like playing this game. It looks like Google Eyeglass that's like like causing them to be open to suggestion or whatever, and him and this ensign Robin Leffler like kind of team up to find out what's going on, and this ensign is played by Ashley Judd. And in my memory, that was the only episode she was ever in. But apparently, Ashley Judd was in Darmok first. This episode predates that Wesley Crusher episode, and I did not know that. And in fact, this is Ashley Judd's first acting role.
Oh.
Which I had no idea.
You know what? I'm going to sound like an idiot here, but I've heard the name Ashley Judd a million times, but what is she in? What's she like known for?
Ashley
besides Darmok.
Besides, obviously.
Besides as Ensign Robin Leffield.
She was in some pretty big movies. She was in Heat, A Time to Kill. I think maybe one of her biggest movies was Double Jeopardy with Tommy Lee Jones, where she
her
husband dies,
movies.
She gets framed for it, but then like they find out the husband's alive and it's like, well, I can't kill my husband again. So that's kind of like one of those thrillers.
Go ahead.
She was also in that movie. I'm trying to think of movies where she is like right on the poster. She's in that movie Bug. I don't know if you guys remember that one.
I don't.
The only movie I've heard of is Heat that you've mentioned.
I was going to say, as we talked about cultural context of certain things and Harvey Weinstein, I believe wasn't actually
Judd at Bug.
Well, wasn't Ashley Judd one of the many actresses who he blacklisted because she either refused his advances or just didn't want to play his games, where he basically was like, oh, she's crazy, don't work with her, she's hard to deal with,
yeah, she's tough, she's difficult,
she's a bitch, she's difficult, yeah. And was met one of the many casualties of his reign in Hollywood.
Yeah, it was specifically Weinstein, and it was during, apparently it happened during, I'm looking here, she said it happened during the filming of Kiss the Girls. which was that was the movie she was in with Morgan Freeman, and I think that he was actually like he might have been the same. Oh, he was Alex Cross. That was an Alex Cross movie. That's a series of movies.
Alex Cross, okay, yeah,
oh, sure.
Because I remember that I was just like Alex he was Cross, playing like the universe. Same character in like a few different movies, but I never
is that like a movie, Tom so. Clancy thing.
Darmok and Jalad.
Darmok and Jalad, dude. But it's like a series of books, if I were to equate it to a series of books that you probably never read, it would be like the Jack Reacher books.
Oh, the Jack Reacher.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm aware of those, but I've never read them.
Sure, sure.
You see how language is so. I mean, hey, that's literally when you're talking about pop culture. If you are discussing, a movie or a genre or something that someone has never heard of, you are just talking gibberish to them. Mm-hmm. And
true. We've all been around someone who's like making a reference to a movie and you have like, I have no idea what you're
like,
talking about.
I don't
about.
Know. They're like, yeah, it's from director Bleep Bloop. And you're like, it's starring,
Chakra, when the gates
fall. Chakra, when Temba is arms wide. You've seen Temba. You've seen a Temba movie. And you're like, I guess if you say so.
Yeah, you remember the first Temba movie, Chakra, when the walls fell?
That's what we're talking about. So maybe we're not so different from the Temerians after all.
As I'm reading the Chattopedia for Ashley Judd,
is it just getting increasingly depressing?
It really is. I won't get into it because I don't want to bring the show down. But yeah, let's just say
she
Harvey
was
Weinstein,
not
piece
well.
Of shit. The whole environment of in Hollywood and all that stuff, just terrible. I'm glad Hollywood's gone. That it's just a distant memory. There is no more Hollywood.
So glad Hollywood sunk into the sea. Anyway,
but yeah, great episode. Again, one of my favorites.
If you were to make like a top five of Trek episodes, would this be on it for sure?
Absolutely. Yeah. For me, if I were to make a top five right now, just knee jerk, this would be on there. I would also put the next phase where Geordi and Ensign Ro are like cloaked and they don't realize it and they're like going through
out
style.
Of time or whatever.
Oh, that was a fun one.
Yeah.
Oh, and I can't think of any more.
I want to mention one thing that is interesting. So there was some writer for Doctor Who, which I'm like super talk about Chakra when the walls fell. I had
and
no
bleep
idea
about Jalad.
But it's just an interesting story. So he mentioned that like he read the like tagline for this episode, like, you know, here's what it's about. And he thought it was so interesting and like didn't like he basically was like, there's no way the episode can like I'm going to like ruin it by watching the episode. So he never watched the episode. He just like read and obsessed about the tagline.
Is this fucking like Alex Moffat or some shit?
I don't know. But he ended up writing a Doctor Who episode. It was Russell T. Davis. Okay. He ended up writing a Doctor Who episode that was basically...
What if you did Star Trek?
What he thought of as the tagline, yeah.
Okay.
Which I'm curious to watch that episode now.
Oh, so his idea of what this episode...
He said, I love the idea so much, I'd rather think about it forever. And nearly 20 years after the episode, he wrote a Doctor Who episode with the same... Basically him trying to like write
that
tagline into a thing.
Kind of makes sense for most of Doctor Who though. If you want
I
to
read a
it
Star Trek
of,
byline. Let's
I
write.
I heard about Star Trek. What if I don't look into it?
That being said, to be fair to Doctor Who, there are a lot of good Doctor Who episodes, post 2005 when it was rebooted. Yeah, I don't want to make it sound like we're bashing. This isn't like The Mandalorian again with Mike, where he's bashing a perfectly fine TV show,
perfectly
just
watchable,
completely
program.
Bashing it. Like, please forgive us.
Yeah, I was
us. Like,
really dragging Mando through the mud.
Mike does not speak for the rest of us.
Well, speaking of Star Trek and our next sojourn into space. Hope y'all are ready for some season 6 Rascals.
Oh!
The episode where Picard, Ro, Guinan, and Keiko turn into 12-year-olds.
Wait, is that season six?
Yeah, that's season six.
Oh, wow. Okay, I thought that was... To me, like, when you said that, I thought that was a season seven episode because it's so crazy. That,
it's a silly one. Like, but it's...
To me, it seems like an idea where it's like, we're out of ideas. What else can we do? It's
season turn them seven. All into kids.
I have to disagree because what is better than, uh-oh, our characters are kids. What are they going to do?
You know, honestly, I am excited. I am David, his arms wide with this episode. That's a fun one. That'll be fun to talk about.
Yep.
I want to see kid. I want to see Guinan as a little kid.
I
hope
like
Guinan keeps the outfit.
That's the thing. I think I'm never going to be mad at what if our characters were little and they're wearing little versions of Starfleet uniforms and stuff.
Little tiny Starfleet uniforms.
It's cute. And well, it's good. Shaka when the walls fell.
Well, when we come back, we will be jumping on our beds with enthusiasm for season 6, episode 7, I believe. Yeah. Rascals.
Banding our daddies.
We want to watch the episode now! Now!
Now!
Get ready.
It's a little disturbing how much I remember from this offhand. Man.
It's a really good episode, that's why.
But we'll be back next time, folks, as the Trek cast returns with Rascal.
Captain's Log Supplemental. Apocalypse Video Trekcast, its arms wide. Mike, Jackie, and Dave on the ocean. Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. The listener's patience. Sharka when the walls fell.